I am John, Whoopi impersonator and a Ladrin warlock with the Warriors of the Stars. Along came Jason, my bearded friend. Fabulous secret ideas were revealed to me the day he came to my house and said, I want to make a podcast! Only two others share this secret. Eric of the Loch Ness and Jacob. Together we started talking about toys, comics, games, and movies on the Super Awesome Geek Show!
Welcome to the Super Awesome Geek Show, and may the force of the holidays be with you. That's right, this time we're going to be doing a holiday special in the same vein as that famous Star Wars holiday special, maybe, but probably not as cheesy and disco. I'm John, your host, and what I'm going to do is talk to each of our more frequent co-hosts and find out what they geek out about at Christmas, let them share some stories of their childhood, and yeah, hopefully just have some fun sharing Christmas memories. So what I'm going to do, this is a pretty long one, so I'm going to put part one up this week. That's what you're listening to now. And next week on Christmas, you will find part two. So without any further delay, let's get right into it and find out what everyone geeked out about when they were children at Christmas.
So what is it we're doing? You said Christmas?
Yeah, Christmas stuff. Like what we all, like any memories we have growing up as kids and toys we got or games or just or video games, whatever, or even music or anything, like your favorite stuff. Like what did you get? Anything that you remember, like a special story or something, like if as a kid just being like, you know, I loved getting this, or this was the coolest Christmas ever, or something, you know. Or even a funny story, like, oh, my brother got this crappy thing, and he had to deal with it, you know?
Be like the kid, the little kid on Christmas Story. Oh, that's a Zeppelin, that's mine! Oh, it's a fire truck, that's mine! Like, pulling everything out.
So what memories do you have, Rob, of a Christmas morning?
Oh.
Go back to little kid in Japan or something. And
well, yeah, because you definitely don't want bitter, like, old person me now. Because, you know, like, bitter old person me now is just like, the Christmas season is just a, you know, a way to showcase your inadequacies. You know, the little me is just like, presents and toys, yay, ah! I remember, God, you know, I think one of the coolest things that I ever got for Christmas was a camera, actually. I'm not many people know this, but I used to be a big photo nerd. So I loved, you know, taking pictures. I still have that camera, actually, now. It's 30 years old.
What camera was it?
Absolutely. It was a Minolta Maxim 7000. It was Minolta's first serious, like, autofocus camera with an onboard computer that basically handled all of the aperture and
shutter speed.
Yeah, shutter speed controls. You'll have to excuse me, you know, my brain cells don't exactly always function when I'm pulling back, you know, 30 years. So it had a computer that would help control the shutter speed and the aperture and whatnot. I mean, it was a badass camera. Sadly, my favorite film stock that I used to shoot on, which was this beautiful Fuji black and white film stock, they stopped production on it like 5 years ago, I want to say. I still have like two rolls that I've been saving for the last like decade, which is, you know, it should be really interesting when I see what winds up coming out of those rolls, just because, you know, when you shoot on old film stock, weird things happen.
Yeah. Did you use all, like, Kodak film, or did you get, like, Fuji film?
Nah, my favorite to shoot on was Fuji.
Yeah.
It was a particular black and white film stock that they made, and it just gave, like, it was what I really enjoyed shooting with. It just had the right grain. It was what I really liked. And, nowadays, I'm sure you might be able to find, you know, a few rolls here or there on eBay, but that's probably going to be about it.
Where do you go locally to get anything like that developed?
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't anymore. I mean, you got to figure that most of the businesses that really dealt with film, you know, 35 millimeter have kind of gone tits up, really.
Yeah, there's at least one or two of, like, the big camera places that will still
do it. Okay.
I think Glazers will still do it. And there used to be a place in Bellevue. I don't think it's still there, but it was like a fancy schmancy camera place.
Yeah, there was a place in Seattle that did gorgeous, gorgeous black and white prints, but I got it. At this point, it's been so long, I don't even remember what they were called, like Panda or Zebra or something like that, you know? I mean, yeah, shoot. And I still, yeah, I said, I still have that camera up in my closet. I just don't shoot on film anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, up until a while ago, you could get it developed at, like, Bartels or...
Yeah, Rite Aids or whatever, you know?
But I don't think they have processing anymore. I think it's just... I mean, I think you could probably go in there and print out your pictures from a digital file.
Yeah, you can.
But I don't think you can still do... Back when I was shooting film, the thing that really cheesed me off is that they would always scratch it. So you'd take them to the place that has the... Yeah. They have the big, long rolls that they run the film through... Mm-hmm. And you'd come back and you'd look through your viewer or whatever, and then there'd be like big long scratches all the way, because the machine is, you know, the machine does 10,000 or did 10,000 rolls of film all the, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They run them through it, so they come back with big scratches on it, so you're like, great, so now, I mean, it's pretty much ruined.
Yeah, those bloody spindles would get burrs on them, you know, and it would just wreck rolls of film.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, one of the things I love to do was hand processing film, you know?
Yeah.
Just, that was just the best. Couldn't really do that with color, just because, you know, I mean, the temperatures that you need for color have to be so exacting to get reproduction right. But for black and white, you know, you could still, you know, throw all that crap into a light tight bag, you know, do all that stuff in the dark. And you know, it was fun. There was something about that manual, that analog process that I just really enjoyed, that you know, even though I can reproduce all those darkroom tricks on Photoshop now, the fun and the experimentation just isn't there anymore, you know?
I never developed my own film. I always sent it out.
Oh, dude, developing film is very zen, because, like if you screw up, you know,
shake it's... it and then wait for, you gotta watch the little timer go around and shake it.
Oh, yeah.
I took photography all through high school and into college as well, so...
Nice.
Did you have any of your, like, clothes with the little developer stains on them that never, ever come out?
Oh, God, dude. All of my clothing through college...
brown stains, and you're like, where did that come from? Oh, wait, that's a developer that's totally ruined whatever shirt that was, or pants, or whatever it happened to be.
Oh, yeah, dude. Seriously, every piece of clothing that I had in college had either photochemicals on them or oil paint. One or the other, and I don't know how the hell I did it, but even clothes that I never wore to the studio, you know, like my furniture always had like oil paint or something on it. Just like, how the hell did that even happen, you know? But oh yeah, man, that's the perils of being an art student, right? It's just like, don't bother having a nice wardrobe.
Yeah,
but you know, those are still some of the best times, you know. And hell, I still love getting, you know, art supplies and stuff for Christmas. I have to admit that you know, even if it's, you know, art supplies that I already have, it's still cool when somebody gives you art supplies.
Yeah.
I think
my first, I used my dad's camera for a lot when we went out, and I remember going to like national parks. Like, we drove all the way up to Wyoming one time, went to the Yellowstone when I was a little kid, and with my mother and my father, and we went to, you know, a few other, like Niagara Falls and other things that were on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And they always let me use my dad's camera, which was, you know, 35 millimeter, big honking thing that I could barely pick up. and what they were always amazed with was how I could always get all these shots of animals and things that they never saw whenever they were out on their own. They were like, the animals just seemed to be drawn to me as a little kid, so they would always just come out and I could get all these shots. They were like, you could always walk right up to them too as a little kid. They were like, we'd try coming in a little closer and the animals would run away. And then when we learned to stand back, and they were like, you let me just walk up, and the animals would sit there, and I'd get as close as I wanted and got all these really good pictures.
Oh, you're a regular photographic St. Francis of Assisi.
So my dad was always saying how amazed he was at how things that I could capture and get that he didn't think anybody else could get. So they eventually bought me my first camera, which was a disc camera from Kodak. Do you remember those cheesy little things?
Oh, yeah, totally.
And it worked for a while. I got pretty good shots off of it, you know, even though it wasn't the high-quality camera that it, you know, could have been. But
have flash bulbs?
Those little cubes. Yeah,
the little flash cubes?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Those things were a trip. I mean, talk about just a brilliant engineering feat to get a recurring revenue stream. I mean, four uses, pop another one in, you know? And it's like everybody else, you know, fixed flash. You know, who needs a fixed flash when you can have a disposable flash? Oh, yeah, I totally, those, I remember the disc cameras, the Polaroids.
Oh, yeah. My mother had a Polaroid, but I never really got to play with it much before. I think that's when they probably got divorced around then, and she took it with her.
Oh, gotcha.
Polaroid film was pretty expensive, I think, so they probably wasted.
It was hugely expensive for what it was. I mean, you'd only get, like, what was it, like 5 or 8 shots in a cartridge?
I don't remember.
Had a Polaroid, so...
It's like, I don't even remember. I mean, I just remember that those cartridges were like 1 inch thick that you fed into this giant box of a camera. And you'd get like 8 shots out of that. And that was pretty much it, right? But the idea that it was basically a dark room in a piece of film, you know, was kind of incredible.
Yeah.
Just we've done so much, you know, in terms of, you know, the science of photography since then that it's just like, wow. That is obsolete as hell.
Yeah, I remember them making a big deal when they made the last Polaroid film. I don't think you can get it anymore.
Yeah, I want to say that somebody stepped in to redo it in like small batches.
Yeah.
But then Polaroid itself started making cameras that did like, you know, like sublimation printing, you know, and whatnot, and could print out like stickers and stuff. Oh, you know. For your camera, so they've brought kind of new life to the idea of the product, although I don't think they've found any kind of footing yet.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Do you guys remember your first digital camera, speaking of cameras?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So let me tell you about mine, and then we'll go in. So I got a funny story about a digital camera, which is why I wanted to bring it up. So my father, when the computer era was all starting and all this, and they had the digital camera, he was like, I'm going to buy you a digital camera. And one year, I don't remember if it was Christmas or birthday, but he got me this digital camera that had a pivoting lens, or so I could spin it around so that you could capture yourself, or you could spin it back around 180 and capture the outside world, right? Uh-huh. And it had its own little, like, 2-inch screen on there. And I don't really remember what it was called, but it was like... On the bottom of it, it said pivoting digital lens or something like that, right?
Okay.
And we went to, I think it was a Casio, but I really can't be certain about that. But we went to Las Vegas one year with my friends. I think it was Matt and Brian. Might have been Matt and my brother. I don't 100% remember, because Matt and I went 2 or 3 years in a row every year, and we brought a different third person with us when we went. And, one year, I'm out there on the street taking photographs of the different, you know, casinos and everything. And this group of, I think they were French students or something, came by, and a few Japanese people, and they see me with this camera. And to them, I mean, I'm sure you know how some of the Japanese guys are. They were, like, enthralled by new technology. So they were, like, huddled around me as I'm taking these pictures. And one of the French people are like, what is that? What camera do you have? Or something, you know, in the French accents, which I can't do. And and I point to the bottom because they can barely speak English, and they look at it and they go, le pivot digital! You know? Because that's like all they could pick out on the camera. So from then on, it was called le pivot digital. Because my friend Matt just got a kick out of the way they said that. He was like, hey John, break out le pivot digital. Let's take some pictures. Yeah. Like everywhere we went, it had a nickname from that day on.
Oh man!
But it was a cheesy little thing. It could probably only do like 480, you know, on the screen. You know what I mean? It was like super small, not even a megapixel worth of you know, stuff on there. I mean, it was like extremely brand new item, really cheap, really low quality. You know, I mean, you could half the time. You could barely even make out the pictures when you put them on your computer. It was.
Oh, do not say bad things about Le Pivot Digital. Le Pivot Digital is your friend.
But man, those are some good trips to Vegas. Matt used to take the camera and go up the street, and he'd be like, mix in with that crowd of old people and pretend like, you know, I'd be behind them, but because of the camera and the perspective, it looked like I would turn my head and just, like, open my mouth, and it looked like I was talking to them, and he goes, and he would caption it like, John met a bunch of new friends. And then he'd be like, hey, go get the giant gold panning thing, you know, at the golden nugget, you know, he's like, climb up under that statue and get in the pan, like he was panning for John, you know, and then, because they had ridiculous huge statues back then. I think the golden nugget burned down one time, so now it's not even there anymore, but then he'd have me, like, looking through the trash, and he'd be like, John lost all his money on the gambling tables and we're forced to scrounge for food, you know, it was just like, we just have fun like that the whole time, and...
Nice.
Fun with Le Pivot Digital.
Le Pivot Digital!
Robert, do you have any other fun camera stories? Or?
I don't know about a fun camera story. I think the first digital one I got was a Pentax, because my dad had Pentax, and so I have, you know, a whole bunch of lenses from that. And then I got some more from my great uncle who was into photography, so I've got some old film cameras that just kind of hang out that don't really get much use anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. I suppose you could still buy film and do it, but it's, I mean...
Nowadays, you take more video, don't you, with your wakeboarding and stuff?
No.
Not even as much anymore?
Not really that much. You might take more pictures now than... I mean, the new cameras will do...
Both usually, both, right?
Usually, yeah, but...
That's ridiculous what the new cameras will do these days. I mean, good Lord, talk about just consolidation of all of your AV devices into, like, one unit.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
That Canon, is it an EOS, I think I got? The EIOS, right? They're really good. I really enjoy that camera.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got one of the cheap models. It was, like, $500 or $600 to whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess mid-range ones, right?
Yeah.
Still make them pretty. Do you know B&H Photo is? It's a like mail order place, but it's like fairly high end.
Yeah.
And I still get the emails from them, and you can. I mean, you can buy. You still buy cameras for, you know, their bodies by themselves for like $5,000.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you can totally get. You can totally get stuff that's like just through the bloody roof, but. Oh my God!
It was terrible. We were in Oregon. Sophie and I were down in Oregon, and we went to this shop, and it had typewriters and old cameras and stuff. And I still remember it was like the holy grail of film cameras when I was into it. It was the Nikon F4, and it was like baddest of the bad cameras, and you get it for like $200 because you know it's a totally kick ass film camera, but just people don't use film anymore. So
yeah,
and it was probably thousands when it was new, right?
Thousands when it was new.
Oh yeah.
Well, back in the '80s, that was even more than But
that's like, you know, definitely like high end professional camera. You know,
it was the business. Everybody in photo class wanted it. You know, like this thing is the totally coolest thing around. But none of us, you know, we're all high school kids. We can't afford that.
Yeah,
no kidding, right?
Now you can get it for a couple $100.
That's amazing how technology just changes things, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you look at the evolution of digital photography, I mean, good Lord. The first digital camera that I wound up using was in art class in college. It was a Sony Mavica that saved things to little 3.5-inch floppy disks.
Oh, wow.
I believe that the high end was 640 by 480, but it might have been 320 by 200. I don't remember 100%. And then I wound up getting a digital camera to take reference for art while I was still in class, right? That blew that away at the time. It was amazing. It was a Canon PowerShot A50. It had a whopping 1.3 megapixel CCD. It was a beast because, you know, you could take... the raw format, uncompressed TIFF. It was cool, you know? And, you know, now it's like that's like a webcam, you know?
Yeah.
You take, you know, 1280 by 960. Oh, baby, that's so cool.
Yeah. Most of our phones have, what, 8 or 10 megapixel now?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, hell, my point and shoot's 14 megapixel. My DSLR is an old one, but it's, I think, an 8 megapixel DSLR Canon. You know, it suits my purposes, although, you know, God forbid, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll gladly take like a Nikon, like, you know, 5D or 7D or something, you know, like that, you know, with like 28 megapixel.
Yeah, they're pretty far now.
But hey, you know, I mean, between my point and shoot, my phone, and my DSLR, I'm pretty well set, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel, too. My Canon DSLR, that iOS, I don't remember if it's like, it's probably 18 megapixel, because I bought it only about 6 or 7 months ago. But that and my phone, that's all I use now.
yeah. You know, I still have a few lenses floating about, but God, you know, realistically, you know, I don't want to carry an entire bag of kit with me.
Yeah.
You know,
I do want a couple of lenses. I want to get a macro lens so I can do stuff really close up for my action figure art.
All you really need is an extension. You can get them for like $10. Like,
oh, really?
I got one off of eBay. It's just basically what it did. Like, you have a short lens, right?
Yeah.
Basically, it hooks in between the body and the lens and pushes the lens farther away.
Okay.
And so then it you can take, it has like 3 different sections.
Okay.
So you can take one section off and you put it on there and it's like kind of close, and as you put more sections on, it gets closer and closer and closer.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
And it's pretty cheap. I don't know how great it works with zoom lenses. The one that I use it with is, I have just a 50,
a flat 50.
Yeah. It's not a zoom. So it's just, you just focus and you're done. You don't zoom in out with it. So
I'll have to check it out. That's pretty cool.
But yeah, that was pretty cheap, so you don't...
Yeah, and then I want to get a pretty good zoom, because when I'm in Florida going after the animals, like the alligators and the birds down in Florida, I can't get as close as I could with some of the other mammals. You know, mammals seem to stand there in the yard or in the field, and you could just kind of walk up and get pretty good. But you don't really want to get too close to an alligator, especially in the summertime when they're really pretty active. And I've learned that lesson a couple times with my dad chuckling in the background, because he's like, you're going to get eaten.
Oh, man.
One of them swam right up to me and opened his jaws and hissed at me, and my dad's like, oh, boy, there we go. So I kind of learned to back off in the summertime when they're pretty active.
Well, you've got Canon, so their lenses are...
Yeah, they're a dime a dozen, I think, right? I mean,
I got a 28-200 or something, so I could shoot wakeboarding. It's not the best of lenses in the world, but it was less than $100.
Yeah.
Kenmore camera.
Yeah.
So it's used, but it's fine. And
yeah, I'll just look sometime next year when I get more money and stuff and eventually find what I need. So, Robert, I want to ask you, like, what are some of the things you remember as a kid getting at Christmas?
I think the best, there's two really good things that I got for Christmas. One, I got a BB gun. And I didn't shoot my eye out. It was a pretty wussy BB gun. It was a lot smaller than my brother's BB gun, who's, you know, older than I am. But I still have it. It's still at my parents' house.
Was it the single pump action?
No, you got to pump it up. So it's like, there's like big warnings to say, you know, pump 10 times. We need, you know, 20, 25. I'd shoot that BB out there. But that was, you know, what kid doesn't want a BB gun?
I had a BB gun.
Boy doesn't want a BB gun.
And I think all of us on the farm in the farmland had BB guns. We were all out there with our BB guns. I got shot with a BB gun. I still have the scar.
We used to shoot at each other with the BB guns, but that's another story.
Oh, man.
And then, like, the best, like, toy thing there was, like, a G.I. Joe hovercraft.
Oh, yeah, I remember the hovercraft.
Big fans on the back, and you know, would open up, and all the G.I. Joe guys could pile out. And
I think we always wanted the hovercraft, but we never got one. If we were your friend, Mark and I would have been jealous.
I think I still have it. I think it's still in my parents' attic. It's probably worth nothing, but...
No, they're probably worth something these days.
Yeah. It's probably hammered, because we...
Depending on condition.
Just shoot them with the BB guns. Maybe not the hovercraft, but definitely the...
Definitely the guys.
It's like, if it got to the part where their thumbs broke off and they couldn't hold anything anymore, it's like, okay.
We're BB gun fire.
BB gun or fire, and maybe some both.
Yeah, speaking of fire, man, my dad got mad at me once. I remember when we were kids. I think it was Firefly. No, not Firefly. It was the gray guy who had the sniper gun on the G.I. Joe side. I can't remember Lowlight? What his name is. What?
Lowlight?
Yeah, Lowlight, yeah.
Boom!
Yeah, you're good memory there. But
he was one of my favorite G.I. Joes.
During the course of our imaginary G.I. Joe mission, he died. So, of course, we happened to find a Philadelphia cream cheese box, and it just was the perfect size to put a G.I. Joe guy in. So we built a little stick funeral pyre, put him inside the Philadelphia's cream cheese box, dumped a bunch of lighter fluid on him, and lit him on fire, and put all the Joes standing around him mourning the funeral of him. And then I asked for a new action figure for my dad. I was like, Dad, Lowlight died. We got to go to the store and get a new one. Yeah, you burned him up!
Oh, Viking funeral, man. That's awesome.
Yes, well, it was an honorable funeral for the guy, you know?
Oh, for sure. When I was growing up, and where I was growing up, I could still readily get explosives, like, all the time. So, I could just get firecrackers whenever the hell I wanted them, right?
Yeah.
And so, we had airsoft guns, not like the, like, metal BB guns, right? So they just didn't do the damage to the toys the way that I'd really want to, but firecrackers, on the other hand.
Firecrackers are always good.
Oh, and the little screw hole in the back of the G.I. Joes was just the right size to
cram, like, a little, one of those,
yep.
A little blackjack or something in there.
Oh my God! So many poor G.I. Joes met their demise.
Or you could bend them over a little bit, stuff it up inside when that rubber band went in.
Oh yeah! Oh, that's a little dirty now.
They were pretty robust. I remember.
Yeah, they were.
It took more than one firecracker to do them in. Took at least a few shots with the BB gun to fully destroy them.
We're not giving any kids bad ideas.
God, you know what took out more of my figures than BB guns or explosives? It was rust. Because all of those internals had, like, you know, rubber bands tied to, like, springs and stuff.
Yeah, or metal parts, yeah.
Yeah, if you got them wet, if you, like, brought them to the pool or something like that and dunked your He-Man, you know, it would eat that spring, and suddenly you got no more sweet, sweet punching action.
Yeah.
I can remember some of the G.I. Joes had, like, some of them had, like, a rubber band in the middle, and, like, the rubber band would break, and so they would be broken, and they'd be like, but I really like that one.
Yeah.
I want the other crummy one to break. So you take apart the other one.
Yeah, you don't screw
the rubber band out of it.
Yeah. I remember, like, when I was 10 or 11 years old or something, I had to have braces, and they had the little rubber bands, and I don't know if any of you remember the rubber bands and the braces. Yeah. And if it got to the point where I was like, wait a minute, if I get like 10 or 12 of those little rubber bands, I can repair my G.I. Joe guys, because they ended up being about the same size, and if you strung like 10 or 12 of them together, it was the same thickness as the bands that came in, so I remember fixing a lot of G.I. Joes that way. But I would create my own figures. Once I learned how to take them apart, my friend Paul and I used to rip them apart, and we'd trade pieces back and forth, and make our own guys, you know, like with the extra ones we found at garage sales, or the extra ones we got to buy at stores or something. So you'd take, like, Bazooka's legs and Dusty's head and someone else's arms and a different body, and be like, okay, this is now Quinn. Yeah. Quinn is the new, you know, whoever. You know, and
so, dude, you never needed Modulok. You made your own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we usually only did it with our doubles, so it's not like I ever lost a figure, you know.
Yeah. I think that the biggest, like, influence in my childhood Christmas, you know, since we lived overseas, right, was the Sears catalog. The Sears catalog and the JCPenney catalog. Like, when those came out every year, like, that was the most, like, joyous time of year as a kid. It would be, like, page after page after page of, like, the newest toys, like, video games. I wanted a Nintendo Entertainment System so damn bad. In, like, 1980, what was that, like, 86?
I think it was more like 84, wasn't it?
Was it 84? Okay, 84.
The reason I think,
like,
so,
I remember, oh my God, I saw that in the Sears catalog, and I damn near crapped myself. I'm just like, this is the most amazing thing ever.
So even living overseas, you got Sears and JCPenney catalogs and things?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because
I wasn't sure if they were worldwide or not.
Well, see, we got our mail through the base.
Oh, all right.
So I lived outside of the base. We still got our mail from the States through the base.
Yeah, they were bases. Or, yeah, I see.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the Japanese mail would just come to our house.
Yep.
And so we would still get, like, the, you know, the Christmas toy catalogs and well, all that mail order stuff, because that was really the only way to do it back then. I mean, you know, no, obviously way pre-internet.
Yeah.
You know, that was like your showroom on Christmas was the bloody catalog that came out every year.
Yeah. You saw the pictures I put up of the Arden catalog we had, right?
Yeah.
On the back page of the Geek Show, I think.
Zan, it's the same kind of thing, you know, just page after page of the coolest toys.
But yeah, I think Nintendo was 84, because I believe that summer I was dying for a Nintendo as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents wouldn't buy it. They had got us the Atari 2600, and that was expensive enough. And I think they were basically like, all right, we're done buying you computer game systems, because you played with it for 3 or 4 years and then just kind of gave up.
Yeah,
moved on to other things. And so I figured they must have felt the same way about the Nintendo. I'd use it for a couple years and then move on. Mm-hmm. So I had to save up. So I worked mowing lawns, washing neighbors' cars. I'd collect eggs that we lived on a farm, and the chickens would lay eggs, so I'd collect them all until I got a dozen, and I'd go down the road and start selling them for 75 cents or a dollar a dozen fresh farm eggs. And eventually, after a summer, I had saved up enough money to buy the Nintendo Entertainment System with Robbie the Robot.
Oh, wow, okay, and you had that one.
And I got a small color television with a flat screen, because they were like, it was a big picture tube TV, but it had a flat tube instead of the big rounded ones. And that was like the in thing. The people were like, oh, this will work great for video games. I remember the guy in the store telling me the difference between the rounded tube and the flat tube, and he was like, this is going to work amazing for your video games. So he talked me into buying that TV. And it was only a little tiny, like, 15-inch TV or something, 14 or 15-inch TV. But man, once I had that set up, it was like end of my life for a year. I just sat there playing video games with my friend Bill and Nofrio for like a year, probably. It was like every day after school, we just all come back to my place and play video games until we passed out. And then I think I remember once we got like one of those role playing games, like Dragon Warrior or something like that. And when I first got it, my dad got it to me as a gift, and I immediately went upstairs like on a Friday after school, and I sat there playing it. And then Monday morning, I remember going to my dad and being like, I've eaten so much food, and I'm not getting full. Like, well, I think I might have a tapeworm or something. Yeah. And I was like, I'm so tired and everything. Something's wrong with me. My dad was like, you haven't slept in 3 days. And I was like, what? And he's like, it's Monday. And I'm like, it is? He goes, you got to go to school, by the way. And I was like, oh. He's like, you've been playing that damn game the whole weekend, and you haven't eaten or sleep or done anything else. And I was like, oh.
Wow.
I seriously thought I was sick, but I guess I made myself sick because I didn't stop playing the game. But that's how into video games I was. It just sucked me in, you know?
Well, congratulations. You can be an honorary Korean now.
I think we stopped at the Atari 2600, as I see John's.
Oh, yeah, I still have it hooked up there, yep.
My
Super Nintendo's on the coffee table. I was playing Zelda the other night.
Yeah, my buddy who lived up the street had Intellivision.
Oh, yeah, we wanted an Intellivision. I think Nofrio had an Intellivision, and we were all like, oh.
Yeah.
My buddies all had the NES, and I wound up having the Sega Master System.
How much after the Atari was the Sega or the Super Nintendo or whatever that is that you're... It's got to be at least a few
years. Yeah, like, because I have a photograph still. I'll put it online sometime of my brother and I getting our Atari 2600.
Yeah.
And that had to be like 79 or 80.
So Atari 2600 was 77, it looks like.
When it came out, yeah.
Yep,
because we
released in 77.
We had one that we played it so much that it, like, wore out. It wouldn't work anymore, so they had to buy us another one. Because we added a whole, you know, box full of games for it. So it's like, you can't go upgrade to the next system because they get to buy a bunch more games.
Yeah, I remember we ended up having to get two of them because Mark and I were fighting over it. Even though there's two controllers, we could have taken turns, but I don't know. So there was one in Mark's room, one in my room, and we ended up having about 50 some games between us. And
I remember them being ridiculously expensive.
They were.
Their parents were cheesed up then by another one because it broke. And they're like, just bought that. You know, didn't just buy it. I was like, we already bought that, and now it's broken. You want another one?
And that may have led to some of their decision to not buying the Nintendo was because Mark and I were fighting over the 2600 so much that they had to buy two.
There you go.
There had to be 10, 15 years in between.
Yeah.
The Atari and the kind of new
stuff. Well, I think for us it was probably only 5 or 6 years, but because it had to be like 79 or 80 when we got the Atari. And then I got the Nintendo I really do think it was 84, but I could be wrong. I mean, you could be right in the 86 thing. I don't know.
Hell, I mean, it's easy enough to look it up.
So. Yeah, I'm not near the computer, so.
I'm always near a computer. Wow, okay, released in North America 1985.
Okay, so it's in the middle. We were both
wrong. Right between us.
Yeah.
But I said 10 years after.
Yeah.
It's pretty close.
So,
you know?
Yeah,
released in Japan in 83.
Yeah, it's the Famicom, right?
Yeah, and my neighbor had a Famicom, and I would go over to his house all the time and play Famicom games like Star Wars.
Well, hey, I want to wrap it up tonight. Robert and I are going to get back to our Walking Dead marathon. We're watching the last few episodes, catching up before the season break.
Oh, right on. Have fun.
They've already broken, I think.
Yeah. But we're catching up. So thanks for coming on, Rob.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for sharing your Christmas memories with us.
It became mostly sharing my camera memories.
Well, hey, you geek out about all kinds of things, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, sure.
Yeah.
We're multifaceted geeks on the show.
Cameras, G.I. Joe, and destroying G.I. Joe. And, And
video games,
yeah. All right.
Those were the years.
That they were. We won't even get into when my neighbors got a 22. That's it.
Oh, God.
And then it became really destructive.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And dangerous.
Well, there you have it. Christmas Memories with Robert Bailey and Rob Clifford. Running the gamut there between all the crazy things we did as children and cameras to G.I. Joe. So I'm going to leave you guys with, as I said before, we got a special song, an instrumental from the Young Dawn Orchestra called Mirth. Enjoy, have a happy holidays, and a Merry Christmas, everyone. We'll talk to you next time where we continue our Christmas episode on the Super Awesome Geek Show.
The Super Awesome Geek Show. We have new episodes every Friday. Interviews and other cool stuff go up on Tuesdays when we have them. You can find us at superawesomegeekshow.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/superawesomegeekshow. We're on Twitter at Awesome Geek Show. We have a Patreon account, patreon.com/superawesomegeekshow. All your pledges help, and we really appreciate the support. If you'd like to participate and or be on the show, just email me, john@mywitch.net. Well, from all of us hosts, we'd like to thank you for listening. Hope you have a good week. And join us next time on the Super Awesome Geek Show. See you later, everyone.